First, I want to thank the organizers of this trail lunch and to thank the World YWCA for inviting me. I've been wrapped up so much on work on human rights advocacy for Zimbabwe, so much that I felt inadequate to be able to sit in this panel to talk. So you'll forgive me if some of the language is a bit backward in terms of the progress that's been made in terms of advancing women's rights. So I'm also appealing to you to help me and educate me. And I'm also happy that there are many men that have come in. When we started, there were a few, so I was afraid that I would be the only one. So I'd also appeal to the other men in the room to help beef up my brief presentation and also strengthen my presentation with your thoughts. Sarah has spoken about some of the shocking statistics that I've also come across whilst reading for this presentation. It is shocking to hear that one in every three women has been violated physically or sexually by a man in a lifetime. And in most of these situations, these are men either in her family or these are men that are known to her and are close to her. A WHO report in 2002, which is 7 years back, said that it was one in every five women who are subjected to this sort of violence. And you, if you take that trend and see that this epidemic, as Sarah called it, is actually on the rise, that in this age of enlightenment, where you think that there's so much information available, that this violence against women is actually on the upward trend. We've heard about the story in popular culture involving the two young singers. In my own country, in Zimbabwe, we have had a very tragic story of a couple very much in love, both successful lawyers, one a popular opposition politician. In the end, both lives ended very tragically, again, because of violence. I'm not sure exactly when this happened. It's a few years ago, when in the privacy of their home, there were accusations traded about infidelity. And at the end of the day, the man stabbed his young wife, who was at that time, I think, 25 or 26. He himself was 28, and he was taken into prison, and he committed suicide a few weeks later without even talking publicly about what had happened. And this story has reverberated all around Zimbabwe because these were two young people, well known, and to the eyes of the rest of the nation, this was a couple very much in love, successful with everything going well for them, and there was no reason why this would happen. But this is happening, and it is happening in our societies. Going back to the Rihanna story, many young people were making jokes about these pictures going out, and also people using the why analysis to try and rationalize this. Why did the boyfriend beat up the girlfriend? Is it because of a sexual transmitted disease? As if that is supposed to rationalize this violence. The same was being said also in Zimbabwe when Len Mojongwe killed his wife, Utendo. There had to be something that she had done. She must have had an extramarital relationship. She must have double-crossed him with someone from the other rival political party. And this happens day in, day out, amongst boys, amongst men, and in our own families, that we look for the reason in the woman. There's got to be a reason why she's been beaten up. There's got to be a reason why she's been wolf whistled when she's passed by. It has to be the way that she's dressed. It must be the way that she's looked at the man when she was walking by. And these are the challenges that we have. We also are in a point where I was talking earlier about the world congratulating itself on so many advancements in many different sections of life. Sometimes we also find ourselves congratulating each other about all the improvements and advancements we have done in terms of legislation, in terms of new standards, norms and principles of many different human rights, but particularly women's rights. If we have in our country 25 members of parliament who are female, then we pat ourselves on the back. If we have passed a new bill or act on preventing violence against women and domestic violence, we congratulate ourselves because of this technical advancement or technical improvements. But we never stop to look at the attitudes. Do the attitudes match up to these technical legislations, to these technical principles that we all congratulate each other about and pat each other on the back? In Zimbabwe, we have had recently an act called the Domestic Violence Act, Prevention of Domestic Violence Act, that so many NGOs, male members of parliament, really went to town about, congratulating each other, police congratulating each other that we are ahead of most African countries. We are ahead in terms of the world. Our definition of violence against women is the broadest and the most sophisticated. But you still see that day in, day out, all the headlines in the major papers, husband kills wife, man shoots girlfriend and shoots a family, man rapes girl age 3. These are headlines that we read about in the paper. And most times, sometimes people just flip over and you go to the sports page. But it is happening in our lives. What you also find sometimes is when you have a country that is hard-pressed, like my country, Zimbabwe, the tendency becomes that of marginalizing the issues of women. And we're talking with a group of activists from Zimbabwe who are here for the Human Rights Council. And people always say this, these women need to wait for a little bit so that we take care of the big business. We remove the dictators first, and then after that, we take care of the national issues, and then after that, we look at the issues of women. But as much as we talk about all these high-profile cases of a high-profile lawyer or politician being abducted or arrested, there is many more women facing abuse, facing violence at that point, and that does not make the news. That does not cause the same international outcry as it does when a single member of parliament is arrested and abducted. And sometimes some of us are also complicit in that, that sometimes we are blinkered by what we do in our lives, if it is the macro, the big picture thing, that we don't stop to think about this. Also, the reality in our family lives and our societies as well, that as young boys grow up to become men, and if this is not started at this age, if a brother does not learn how not to abuse his sister, he will become a husband one day and will continue the same thing. And this is what we have. In the workplace, it is the same. And I think we need to look at our family unit. We need to look at how we raise our children. Hopefully, we now have some role models. We look at the new man in the White House with his two little daughters and with his wife. And hopefully, men like him in positions of power who speak out publicly. And we also show with their actions as well that that epidemic needs to be stopped and that we need to accept that this is a huge problem. What can men do to help stop or to help eliminate violence against women? I think most of the times men put sticks in their ears when women's organizations continue to advocate, continue to raise the issues that women are facing, to raise the violence. People just do not want to listen. I think it would be great for organizations, even men's organizations, to work and engage with women's organizations to listen to all the stories that our sisters, our mothers, and our colleagues have. Men need to confront and challenge the conspiracies of silence, of fear, of prejudice, to be afraid of the guys saying that you are weak because you do not beat up your wife, to be afraid of pub talk. We also need to confront the issues of privatizing domestic violence. And this is a big problem that for so many years, people have said, this is my private business, that this is bedroom business, that even when you go to report to police, that this is said to be not in the public interest. That men also, especially men in responsibility and positions of power, need to come out and speak out publicly when we have these incidences. So you do not only leave it to women's organizations to champion the issues of women facing violence, but also for men to come out and unite and work hand in hand with women. And that is one of the biggest ways in which men can also help other men to help women in the process of actualization. There's an example of two organizations that are there in Zimbabwe, Padari Men's Forum, where men and boys themselves gather and talk about what it means to be male, what it means to be a strong male, that being a strong man does not mean beating up your wife, does not mean beating up your girlfriend. And I think these sorts of initiatives need to be promoted and advanced, and to collaborate in a mutually reinforcing way with women's organizations that have always taken a lead role. And lastly, I'd say the World Soccer World Cup 2010 is coming up in South Africa. And I think these are some of the milestones we need to look at. How are men relating with young women and women in South Africa during the Soccer World Cup? And we have had the European Cup here in Geneva, and we've seen some of the incidences that have happened. So with that, I thank you, and thank you, moderator.
Thank you so much. We move on to Vera Tobun. I asked her, how should I introduce you? Apart from the fact that she's a lecturer of women, English and American literature, gender studies, and she's also chairperson of administrative board for guidance and training center for family and children. She told me that her education actually has just helped her to better articulate her embodied concern. I mean, being a Palestinian Christian woman who has faced all these experiences that we hear about, her property being demolished and her husband dead, and raising five children within an area where she can't visit her neighbor because she's not allowed to, and all the struggle that comes with that. Here is Vera, who we are so privileged to have to talk to us about what it means to be a Palestinian Christian woman in that area of the world, and as in relation to our theme today. So Vera, thank you very much for being here, and it's your 10 minutes.
First, I would like to extend my gratitude for all those who facilitated my presence in here. When we say Palestinian context, and it's important that we extend together in the understanding of what it means and why it is important for me as a Palestinian woman to be among you today. When it comes to the Palestinian women find three types of this oppression. And with their work together, all they end in besieging that woman with hardly easy alternatives and choices. When we talk about patriarchal oppression, yes, it is there. Palestinian woman, when she suffers from the Israeli occupation, yes, it is there. And finally, a new occupier now appeared in Palestine, and which is the wall and the segregation zone surrounding every city. By itself, it's a physical occupation that hardly can be physically resisted. Such a wall needs to be mentally, psychologically resistant. And my question here, and my role here, and my conviction here as a Palestinian woman, that woman, that creature who can help the psychological and mental resistance of the wall, is the Palestinian woman, mainly as a mother, mainly as a nurturer, and finally, as our Prime Minister Fayyad called her, the guardian of our everlasting flame. Imagine, the Palestinian woman is the guardian of our lasting flame. The guardian is a major role, is a big role. And yet a question, do we as women in Palestine are considered and treated as the real guardians? Yes, we are called the guardians, but vis-a-vis a completely discriminatory reaction. Where is women in politics in Palestine? Where is women in other arenas in Palestine? Her role is slightly considerable, because when it comes to social resistance and social discrimination, unfortunately, Palestinian women does not work as hard as she should, or maybe, yes, we work, but we're not given the opportunity in parallel to her political struggle. Just recently, a very important phenomenon has raised in Palestine. And due to the wall, every city is being walled. Every inhabitant lives in his city, hardly capable to move out of his city. Due to that siege, economic situation is deteriorated, anger is increased, pressure is witnessed. And guess who is the victim for all this? The victim for all this, whether from man-woman relationship, whether occupier and occupied, the final victim is the Palestinian woman. And unfortunately, the level of incest in Palestine has increased. The level of incest crime has increased. And you have to know a very important factors in Palestine. When we call our culture, what is it a culture of what? Definitely, everybody know that the Palestinian culture stems from an Arab culture where the family is highly honored, where the code of honor is highly cherished. Our culture is called the culture of shame, where every individual cannot behave according to his, her own desires. Whatever you do is shameful. And that is why be careful. And unfortunately, in our culture, the female, she has to take a lot of concern about how she behaves, how she reacts, how she speaks, how she dresses. Because if she does anything that jeopardizes the code of honor, she will jeopardize the reputation of her family. Many Palestinian young females, many, they have to be aware on how they act. Just recently, we had witnessed a lot of honor crimes. And when we say honor crimes, it means young females who have been killed for committing illegal sexual action, or they have been discovered for incest without it being them initiating the incest itself. And the penalty, unfortunately, and up till this moment, the person status law in Palestine permits the imprisonment of a male, a father or a brother, for 6 months only, if he kills a daughter or a sister or a wife for committing any crime against her honor. That means in relation to sexuality and rape or whatever. As long as he pay back by killing her, it means cleansing the honor of the family. And that is why it is important for Palestinians to end and witness the end of their national struggle. Don't ever think national struggle. We need to witness an end to it, because in Palestine we have a lot of problems. And when women organizations wanted to work on the Palestinian status law or the penalty law, everything is being always kept postponed until we witness an end for our national struggle. That is why a situation, a solution that fits the Palestinians and Israelis as soon as possible will enable the Palestinian people to live and to address their own problems. Yes, we do need. We have exactly like any other nature, environment problems, gender problems, women problems, health problems, water problems, but all of this is addressed in a less manner. And when it comes to women, I consider it not in an enough manner, due to our main interest in the national struggle. Thus, women in Palestine are victims for a fourth kind of discrimination, waiting their agenda to be addressed. And seriously, yes, it is addressed now, but it is not enough. As long as we have women working unappreciated, incest crime are committed out of what is called honor crime, this needs a lot to be addressed and to be worked on. Sometimes we ask, what is the type of the role that we inherit? We, Palestinian women, we inherit two roles. Just recently, again and again, we are called the guardians of our everlasting flame. But I believe Palestinian women has to be the guardians of two other things. For a woman to be the guardian of others, first she has to be the guardian of her own self. She has to be fully aware of her own self. And unfortunately, many Palestinian women, they inherit their role as being the guardian of the other and not the guardian of her own self. second, which is very important, and which is, I believe, in Palestinians have witnessed loss par excellence. And what kind of loss? Yes, it is an irretrievable loss. Whenever you lose land, whenever you are caged like an animal, sorry to say it, but it is a fact, it is a loss. When women in Gaza lose incredible number of brothers, children, and husbands, this is irretrievable loss. We can't construct buildings in Gaza. Yes, I know, donation from all over the world. But what about the mother who lost and she cannot truly continue? There resides, I believe, the importance of empowering these women, empowering Palestinian women, women who suffer from the wall and women who suffer from war. WAR, WAWL, war and the wall. In what manner? I believe if Palestinian youngsters on the long run are not raised well and nurtured well to be more powerful than the siege of the wall, that wall will besiege them mentally, psychologically, and morally. A wall means absence of vision, and God forbid that we witness a younger generation with a walled vision, with walled dreams. And here, I believe, the Palestinian woman has a vital role. She's the nurturer of a generation. She's the nurturer of a generation and the builder of a generation who can be empowered despite the wall and, sorry to say it, enjoy his loss rather than lament his loss, because loss is there. Where do you want to spend your time lamenting it? The loss was permitted on the eyes of the international communities, unfortunately, as well. But that is why we have, from inside, to live the loss, to live it, to know how to live it and go beyond it. The wall is there, the occupation is there, but the role of the Palestinian woman, look how big it is. Because God knows maybe how much is walled from inside, she is weak. But yet, we all have to work to empower these women, and I fully believe in that, to be capable to go beyond and expected violence to be witnessed in the future. Where do you think walled man will act in the future? Maybe a new kind of violence will appear. History, up till this moment, has never documented a collective besieged and imprisoned nation. We are the first to be documented. I'm not talking about walls. I'm talking about besiege of city. Yes, we are the first nature in history to be collectively imprisoned. What is the outcome? Again, unfortunately, history did not say, experiences did not prove what are the outcomes of imprisoning a people for 10 years, what will happen. We either prove we can get out with something really healthy if we work on ourselves, or God knows what will happen. If I have a bleak vision, I cannot imagine a nation fully imprisoned the way we are, under occupation, under a wall, how they will react. And you know well that women and children are the victims in any equation. God knows if we don't empower each other, if we don't empower women to get through the loss, to get through the wall, to get through the discrimination, what will happen? Yes, we know to empower the younger generation, but I think as well we need to empower these women in a specific type of empowerment. Thank you very much.